everyone. My name is Frank Napolitani. I'm the Chief Business Development and Marketing Officer at Stewart & Kissel in New York. And today I'm joined by Gary Anderson, a partner in our Business Transactions Group. Gary, thanks so much for joining us today.
Yeah, thank you, Frank. Great to be with you again.
My pleasure. So today we're going to be discussing the annual Stewart & Kissel Seed Transaction Deal Study that was recently published by you and your team. I really think this is going to be a great opportunity for our viewers to see what's really going on in the marketplace, given the number or the volume of transactions we work on every year, whether it be that be from the buy side or the sell side. So why don't we dive right in? So, you know, obviously COVID-19 pandemic really gripped the world last year, and especially Q1, and I'm sure had a, you know, halted a number of deals that might've been in process at that time. But how did the rest of the year finish out, and how did 2020 relate as to 2019?
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, activity was down somewhat year over year, which, given the fairly strong start to seeding activity in 2020, I think can be fairly attributed to COVID effects. There was a clear lull during the first several months of the shutdown. Not to say deals didn't get done, but there were definitely fewer in number, with activity picking up again in late Q3 and continuing to close out the year. Most seeding activity in 2020 was driven by institutional seeders, where in prior years, we saw a lot of participation from family offices, insurance companies, and other non-traditional seeders. In 2020, the vast majority in our data set had an institutional seeder involved. And as you can imagine, being overweight institutional seeders skewed our observations a bit, but given the institutional seeders, I think can fairly be said to have been sort of leading the evolution of deal terms and seed deals for the last several years, we're still pretty comfortable that our data set's representative. But yeah, it did slow down a bit, but we still saw a lot of them, and certainly so far this year, I'd say that's continuing, so we feel pretty good about it.
That's great. So, you know, thinking about it a little bit more detail here, the investment strategies, if you could talk about the investment strategies that benefited and also that did not benefit from seed transactions last year, who received the most amount of attention?
Well, I'd say, and this is as the case in the last few years, perhaps longer, long short and credit both remain popular. Hybrid strategies also had a lot of appeal, I think perhaps in part due to the perceived attractiveness of accessing the considerable returns that have been generated in those areas, in private issuers, for example, in tech, healthcare, some of the frontiers of energy. And perhaps on the a bit less popular side, I'd say maybe macro strategies, which given the nature of COVID and related uncertainties in terms of how that's going to echo through the worldwide systems, that's not entirely unsurprising, though there are also probably some good arguments that global uncertainty and volatility makes it an excellent time for macro strategies that are good at finding interesting arbitrage and other inefficiencies. So, and frankly, we still did a number of macro deals. So I think it wasn't so much that any particular strategy was disfavored, but hybrid funds in particular, as an evolving structure, got a lot of attention, which was nice to see.
Understood. So why don't we dive a little bit deeper into, you know, some of the deal terms? And why don't we start with the percentage of deals that receive working capital support, for example?
Yeah.
So, and to touch on some of the data points from the report. So 2014, our study showed 22% of seed deals included working capital support. Well, today that equates to 53% of deals, which is a significant increase over the past 7 years. What do you attribute this to?
I think the main point here is that seeders are, and over the last several years, we've seen them be willing to bear some portion of the expense load of the business, particularly when it's just getting off the ground. And we all know that to grow an asset management business, particularly one that has an institutional quality to it, is a capital intensive affair. And so the implication of the existence of a revenue share starting from day one and dollar one is that there is some constraint on the working capital side. You know, historically, there was a little bit of a sense, and you know, maybe fairly, maybe unfairly, but there's a little bit of a sense that Cedars would show up with a bag of cash on day one and then disappear forever after that, with the only ongoing relationship being a quarterly check or wire transfer of the revenue share. Cedars today, however, particularly the institutional ones, really see themselves as partners in the growth of the business and are very interested in helping the seeded managers grow and institutionalize their businesses. Today, we see the a Cedar relationship as having a lot of alignment, which I think is a very healthy thing for these relationships and ultimately for the underlying investors in the seeded funds as well.
Interesting. So, you know, staying with deal structure here, and there's been a, I've been doing this for 25 years and been in the industry for a long time, and seeing how the evolution of seed deals, where they came from, how they went from equity to revenue share. And it seems like there's a little bit of an uptick in true equity versus revenue share. So, you know, true equity deals 2020 were 12%, and, you know, from the bottom of the market of 4% in 2016. What do you attribute this this uptick in?
This one probably, I think, is just statistical noise. You know, maybe an extra equity deal for idiosyncratic reasons and a data set that was already a bit smaller than usual. I haven't seen any reason to think this is a signal of a change to come. The now classic, now traditional, though Frank, you're absolutely right, if you go back and look at the history of it, where it was something that looked more like equity or even contractual revenue share, but the approach of the Cedars taking a special limited partnership or limited partner interest in the underlying funds and other products is absolutely the state of the art. It's what most everyone prefers. And it's not just on the Cedars side. The managers themselves prefer not to have a Cedar sort of rattling around in their corporate structure, needing all sorts of consent rights to protect its interest as an equity holder and the like. So I think the structure is here to stay, or at least until we figure out the next even better version. But I wouldn't overweight that particular aspect. Understood. Or that particular piece of the report.
Understood. So listen, you know, whether you're an investment management firm or you're selling widgets, budgeting and revenue and expenses are obviously big topics as it relates to managing and planning for the future of businesses. So a big discussion point amongst investment managers, that at least that I speak to, how long is my Cedar capital locked up for so I can plan for the future? And some data on that, you know, in 2016, a two-year lockup, that peaked at 79% of deals. But today, that's only 26%. Well, a three-year lockup in 16 was only 4% of the deals. Now that's 47% of the deals. So right. just thinking about this, do you equate this to the underlying liquidity of the underlying strategy and the securities that they're investing in? Or is it the willingness of the seeder to lock up their capital longer for the stability of the manager to reach that all-important three-year track record for marketing purposes?
Yeah, I mean, listen, some of this is a difference of increments. I guess they're all differences of degree, but instead of kind, but this one probably even more so. You know, at the end of the day, I look at it as roughly 3/4 of deals have 2 to 3 year lockups. And you know, lockups can be structured a variety of ways. Sometimes it's all hard, sometimes there's a soft component, different ways of doing it. But I think ultimately the fact that Cedars are willing to put their money in for, you know, now perhaps more often than not, or at least more often than anything else, for 3 years is part of the same alignment story. A longer duration provides for a longer runway to scale the business, particularly in terms of predictable revenue to fund operations. And given the diligence cycles, which inform how long it takes to close on capital from big allocators, a manager having confidence in their ability to stay financially strong long enough to really get to that scalability point, provides a lot of tailwinds and flexibility in the manager's growth strategy. So it's really part and parcel with the same things that are pushing for working capital and other ways that Cedars can be a good partner. And maybe we can even think back a little bit to the comments at the top of this, which were, that there's probably a little more institutional Cedar data in here. Maybe we didn't talk about that, but that's something we know in the study. And so the institutional folks, I think, have really been working hard at structuring themselves and their deals to get at those beneficial partnership aspects, being a good partner. And with having more institutional players show up in our, or more institutional deals show up in our data set, I think that alignment, that partnership mentality is shining through.
Yeah, and just thinking, I mean, the cost of running an investment management firm or starting an investment management firm in, say, 1997 when I started, and what that looks like today with registration, infrastructure, people, yeah, systems, and those type of things, the cost is more than double than that. While you've also had what normally was a 2% management fee, it's down in, at or below 1% in some cases for some class shares. So it costs more. You're getting, there's fee compression, obviously, to be able to finance the business and have it, be a going concern, are obviously big issues with these managers. So Gary, this was great. I really do appreciate you joining me today.
No, thank you, Frank. Really great speaking with you, and looking forward to seeing you the next time.
Thanks so much. And to our viewers, thank you so much for joining us. And please be on the lookout for our next Sorting Kissel Conversation series. Thank you.
Thanks, everyone.